Welcome to LifeWorks, where we talk about life and work and making it work. I'm Hannah Greenstein, a From mompreneur on a mission just like yours, to live the mompreneur life that brings me feelings of balance and inner peace and joy. Here, I hold space for you in the many roles you play as a From mommy business owner. Join me for support, mindset, techniques, and tools around productivity, focus, and work-life balance so you can feel in balance and at peace. If you can find excitement and joy at work and at home, you will thrive in the roles you play and feel fulfilled by your life's work. And that's what I want for you. So let's get started. Welcome, welcome back. It has been quite a break. I hope that you enjoyed a beautiful Pesach break, and I hope that you're having an easy time getting back into things. I think that the transition back into work after a break time is really, really hard, and we're constantly doing it with Yomim Tovim and summer vacation, and then we're constantly being hit with that transition again, and it's tough. And it's important to just give yourself that time, really, on your calendar, block out days when you come back that you don't take meetings, and to just give yourself that patience to get back into things, to feel your rhythm again, and to get things rolling. Today, I have such an incredible episode with Jamie Geller, who you for sure know from her identity as the bride who knew nothing, as the author of a whole bunch of cookbooks, as the founder of probably the largest Jewish media company, and who is now in a position at Aish, joined me on this episode, and just we schmoozed, and it was so real, and it was so gorgeous, and Jamie shared so many beautiful perspectives, and we had some great conversations about work-life balance, about how to maintain that balance, about how bitachon molds all the steps we take. And so I'm excited for you to dive in and listen, and then send me a message. Let me know what you thought of this episode. I'm looking forward to hearing from you. Enjoy.
Okay, let's do it.
Okay. I'm so excited, Jamie. We got to meet at Schmaltz, which was really fun. We were wondering if you're there like as just a mom out with her family or as a food critic.
That was a question that, first of all, I think it's like so apropos that we met at Schmaltz. That's like the cutest thing ever. And I was really excited to meet you, and I loved your energy and your excitement. And so it was like really an honor to be on the podcast. We spoke about it that night. I was really out just with my kids. Like, I happen to know the owner, of course, and I've done a lot of different things with him at those various at Hatch at a lot of times before. I think we did something with Schmaltz at the beginning of the pandemic, when like they had just opened, but were not open, and they were doing deliveries like all over. So they were delivering to like the Gush and Lop HMS. So we did like a fun collaboration then, but we never actually ate in the restaurant.
Really?
And so I took my kids, and I did not tell them I'm coming. And I can't even tell you what's like, God, they're like, why didn't you tell us? And then literally proceeded to bring everything on the menu to our table. We tried everything. We were blown away. It was really fun. But I did try to go undercover and the tichel and no makeup and everything, and it did not work.
I take a second to like, am I sure that's Jamie? But yeah, Schmaltz has good food. So it's fun to live right on top of them.
I feel like it's dangerous.
Yeah. 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 It's a lot of fun. We have good food. So I'm just so excited to dig in with you and just hear more about your journey and your perspective. And I'm sure all of our listeners know who you are. So I think we could just get started. I'm curious to hear, Jamie, as you've journeyed, as your story has evolved, and I know there's been a lot of evolution, how has work-life balance evolved for you? What does work-life balance mean for you today? And how has that changed over time?
That I've done so many things that I'm so proud of professionally in my life. And I have to say, work-life balance has been the biggest challenge ever present and ever changing. And just when you think you've got it figured out, everything becomes unbalanced again. And I always say they only teach you juggling if you go to the circus, but they should have taught us mothers how to juggle, because that really, really is what life is like. And I loved this question. You know, we were kind of talking before about what we'd speak about, because just now I needed to stop, reassess. I'm talking like I'm working professionally for 25 years. I'm married with children for 18 years. And just now I had to be like, whoa, this just got out of hands and we need to reassess quality of life, family time. And I just went back in and did a few changes and tweaks to my schedule to make sure that that's prioritized again. Because even when we have all the right systems in place, we can sometimes get lost. Or like I said, things change
Right.
and the systems no longer work in the way that they were once working for you. So recently what I did now, just to give a practical tip, is I scheduled it into my calendar. Now I've done that before, but then I move it because it's like, oh, this is like, I could schedule something over this. So
Right.
I'm really, really trying. And now I have an assistant in the last few years who's really helped me. Like the times I block out, she really won't overbook on those times. Where when I was managing my calendar myself, I was like, oh, family time or this really important meeting. By the way, like last night I had a meeting with the White House. Okay, I'm going to meet with the White House instead. But the family time has now been sacred and I didn't put it in every single night because I know that that's not practical. I know emergencies will come up, but I put it in firmly 3 times a week and like lightly, let's say another 2, 3 times. So it's like not exactly every single night. And the nights that I know that I need more leeway, it's in for an hour versus 2 to 3 hours on the nights that I can plan around it. So I've had to adjust. It's not like this firm set thing, but it's in the calendar now, and I'm really trying to make sure that it's sacred and adhered to the same way that I would not miss the White House call.
Right. Wow. I think that's so validating because we're all like, when I figure out my work-life balance and then we just never really make it. And to hear that it like, yeah, like that's what it is. It's a journey. And even when you have it figured out, then something external changes, your schedule, your responsibilities professionally or your family schedule and responsibilities to them. And we're also like superhuman. And so we sometimes are much better at sticking to our boundaries and just sometimes not as much. And so I love that you scheduled it in. I'm a huge fan of that. Like I'm always talking like time blocking, getting practical and setting these boundaries and then sticking to them, which is not always easy, but
Look, it's, I don't know if you know how, I don't per se have firsthand experience with Alcoholics Anonymous, but I know one of the steps of the 12 steps program, I know because it's like famous and always quoted, is first admitting that you have a problem. So
right.
I feel like step one is getting it into the schedule. Like that is a top list important initial step. But then, like you said, honoring it and making sure that it's sacred and making sure that it's as important. So I've done that first step so many times. Like they tell you when you want to start exercising, like put your sneakers on at the beginning of the day. Like I'm
Right.
still wearing mine for 2 years. I haven't yet made it to the gym. So I'm really good at that step one, but then the follow through has been a lot of the challenge. And
Yeah.
like you said, your family dynamic changes. Like my kids now need me, my teenagers, at such a later time. When I used to be able, I remember my husband and I remember the days when we put everyone to bed and like 7:30, 8 o'clock, our life started. We had dinner together. I would start work. I would do schedule meetings. I would do things for myself. And now it's like I could really be busy till 12, 1 in the morning if I wanted to with the teenagers. So everything has to shift. And then you have to sort of shift around that as well.
Right.
So your life is a really, really alive, living, breathing thing that with dynamics that change. So that's important to remember.
Yeah, definitely. I see with the women in my program, we have women at all different stages. And like, that's, we have one woman asking, like, this year gone ends at a different time. And then another one who's like toddler just dropped his nap. And another one whose daughter is coming home from dating late at night. And things are just always going to be changing. And so, over time, I think my approach to work-life balance has evolved a little bit from being like, work-life balance is about figuring out sort of the structure that works for you. So practically the schedule, figuring out when you're going to have family time, figuring out how many clients you could take on and still have time for that family time, and then sticking to that structure, to work-life balance is about setting up this structure and this ideal and then breaking the rules all the time that you've made for yourself. And just really the work of work-life balance is knowing how to break the rules and when to break the rules, because anything could be sacred, your family time, your professional responsibilities, but then something more sacred crops up. And so really the work is just knowing like how important is this relative to the schedule that I set up for myself or the rules that I made.
I love that you said the breaking the rules is allowed. People are get so concerned because what is the worst thing we can do? We set these rules and we have the best of intentions, and then things come up. You have to break them. I went to the most tragic levaya last night in the middle of when was supposed to be my family time, and I couldn't not go. So it was a time I had to break the rules. Now, what do we normally do when we break the rules? We make ourselves feel so guilty that we broke the rules that we're not We're not able to be present for that more important thing that we need to be present for. We are killing ourselves because we weren't there for our kids. And then that cycle of guilt breeds 101 other missteps that didn't have to happen because we get ourselves into a bad place. So I love that. It's like, make the rules, but know when you can break them as well. I love that freedom that you gave.
I think that it comes a lot from talk about priorities, because we'll say things like, my family is my number one priority. And conceptually, on a scale of values, that could be totally true. Contextually, in the moment, they could be your number one priority, again, like in the bigger picture. But in this moment, they aren't your number one priority of people to be spending time with, because there is something more important right now. It doesn't make your family less important to you, but it's just like, life is too dynamic and multifaceted to say, like, my family is my number one priority. They always come first. So it's really about just, I love how you put it, like viewing your life as a living, breathing thing. And so just like moving with it.
And I like that you said that also. You just, every mother wants to say and wants to feel and wants to believe that their family is their number one priority and they're making it their number one priority. But like you said, in a particular given moment or scenario, something might need to be prioritized in that moment. But then again, that shouldn't make you feel that you're a bad mother. Right. Like, the guilt is like the worst thing we can do to ourselves. Right. And I think it's probably one of the most challenging, I think it challenges not just only our mental health, but our physical health as well, if we put ourselves in a really guilty place. And so I'm loving the freedom that we're talking about, that we can give ourselves to just still stay true to that value while understanding in a particular moment, something else might need to be prioritized. It hasn't changed your core values, and your life's mission of, like, you know, making your family first.
Right. Right. Exactly. So Jamie, there's something I really want to dig into with you, because I have no idea how this works. I talk, like I said, a lot about structures and systems and boundaries. And I talk a lot about how the first step to work-life balance is work-life split. Because when you have a clear boundary, you're able to be totally present wherever you are. So you're present at home when you don't bring work home with you. That works for a lot of people in a lot of industries. But when your work and your life don't have that clear boundary, because, for example, your kids are featuring on your Instagram page, how does that work?
It is such a challenge. I feel like you're bringing up so many pain points, but it's good to talk about them. My mom always says, talk about it, get it out, you know? So I think we'll do just that. Look, I think you gave a specific example of social media, but what about people who work from home? And what about people that don't have the luxury of space, right? Like, you're newlywed or wherever you are financially in your life. And it might be that your dining room table is your office. Not everyone is so lucky to work from home and then also have a separate room that is designated as their office. So these boundaries come into play all the time in certain industries and certain jobs with certain hours. You can leave things at the office, but when the office and the home become blurred, or the hours become blurred, or what if you work also American hours, right, and we're living in Israel, or vice versa, you're working internationally. So then those hours are not set. And as people really are looking for quality of life, and I know I'm doing so much hiring in the last few years, people are looking for hybrid situations. They do not want to come into the office all the time. People want flexibility and quality of life. They want to be able to come in one day at 10 or 11 or 12, or take a morning appointment, or go to their kids, a play or whatever it is, or the parent-teacher conferences, or the doctor's appointments, or the meetings they need to have, whether they be in the morning, the middle of the day, and then work later. So what are they doing? Life and work it's become a luxury, but yet also so intertwined. So I don't think it's just an issue of how do you handle, like, your work being potentially featuring your children, but how do you handle your work and your life not being so clearly delineated? So I think it's hard. I think for me, I'll answer the specific question you asked, is my family does feature a little bit on my social media, but a little bit. It's not an everyday thing at all. It is just a little bit. And to the degree that I feel comfortable, and, you know, they feel comfortable, and my husband and I have felt comfortable sharing. And if I probably could do it all over again, I wouldn't have ever featured them at all. So I feel like I really fell into social media. It wasn't a prerequisite when I started business in the industry. It's something that became like a necessity somewhere along the way. And when I first started, I always wrote about my family. When I was writing on my website, jamiegeller.com, or when I was writing my first cookbook, almost 18 years old, Quick and Kosher Recipes from the Bride Who Knew Nothing. It's 15 years old for the world, but 18 years old, you should know by the time I started writing it. Like, it
Oh,
took me
wow.
3 years to write. So I wrote so much about my family so that when social media started, it became natural to like put a picture to the stories that I had always been writing, only to realize that it's more detrimental than I, had imagined. Not really what I wanted for, and not really what I want for them. So those that keep their kids out of completely, I beyond admire that. Those that somehow, feature them but without featuring their face, I beyond admire that. But I got to a point where like it was sort of part and parcel to the story. But I have really, really scaled back, really, really scaled back. Also, as the kids have gotten older and the teenagers, or like once they're in high school, will feature on a family simcha. Like if it's a bar mitzvah picture, great. But after that, they're not in it. And like I said, it's very, very, very limited. So first of all, it's a limit. I limit it. It's not a free for all. And then second of all, just when we talk about like how do we, like sort of create the boundaries, when I do family time, I leave my phone home. You saw me at Schmaltz. Okay. Do you want to hear the story? I went to Schmaltz and not only am I wearing a tichel and no makeup and I'm not planning on being on camera, I did not bring my phone. I did
Wow.
not have my phone there. Then they started bringing all the stuff out and I felt so bad. So when I went home, I actually I wanted to share and promote them a little bit because they were just so nice and so good and the food was so great.
Right.
So I just used pictures from their social media account and I put it up on my stories and said, I ate this, I ate that, I ate that. It was amazing. There's no pictures of me there with my family. I did not even bring my phone
Wow.
because I can't, I don't have the ability to separate work and being pinged or being intruded upon. And so it didn't even come with me.
Wow, I love that. I asked you specifically about social media, Jamie, because in my work as a work-life balance coach, I've worked with so many women and myself working from home, working funny hours, living in Israel. Things like workspace and work hours, I see how to work with that. And when it comes to social media, I just have no personal experience with it. And I mean, I see there are women that do it more than you and women that do it less than you, but I see people who are essentially blogging their personal life on social media, and it is so hard for me to understand then how there is any balance, which is why I really appreciated hearing that from you.
Yeah, it's hard, but at the same time, certain people, that's their
Right.
business.
Right.
Their business is that, it's just their lifestyle. And that includes, like you said, blogging and vlogging and storying every moment of their life. And I think that they would probably be better suited to ask that
Right.
question because I have found that I really need a separation, like
Right.
really, really, truly. And you should know that I don't follow a lot of accounts. I try not to look at other people's stories. I try to get on and get off to use it as a tool for my business, but not as entertainment. And that's what I think is someone I read somewhere once, and I wish I could remember. But so many of us, I don't even know if it was written or I heard it in a shir, so many of us are ignoring our kids or watching somebody else's kids on social media. And I was like, I can never, the moment I catch myself falling into that, did that something popped up and I saw it's like, if I'm gonna have time to watch someone else's kids, I'm gonna be with my kids. So that's my perspective on it.
Right. Wow. So I'm curious. I'm saying we because I'm assuming that everyone listening knows you as Jamie Geller of the cookbooks. In our house, you're Jamie Geller of baked oniony chicken, our absolute favorite.
Just asked me to make that. I haven't made it in so long. That's so funny. Oh my
It's
God.
really, I mean, I get for everything. Like whenever there is an event that I'm bringing something to, I bring my oniony chicken. I make it every time we have guys for Shabbos, and I've been asked for the recipe over and over and over. We love it. So, and we know you have like jamiegeller.com, and I don't want to say something that's not accurate, but are you the largest Jewish media company, the first Jewish media company?
I mean, that's a good question. We did say we were, we do say that we are the first and largest, and we've grown
Yeah.
an audience of over 5 million followers, and our videos have over a billion views.
Wow.
And we built that over a decade. And I think that we were, among the first to really adopt digital media and new media as a way to build, to share content and to be a publisher, to be a content creator and to build an audience. So that has been a tremendous, tremendous privilege.
And is your audience primarily Jewish?
That's such a good question. It is, I would say, 70, 80% at least Jewish, 80%. But there's a nice majority that is not Jewish. And it is really, really interesting to see how that developed over time. It's certainly not our target and not purposeful, but I don't know if you were following last year, and I brought it into this year too. I've been supporting our farmers through Shemitah and did a massive initiative. And unfortunately, I wanted to raise $1 million. We're at like $538,000 right now. So we've crossed the $500,000 mark, but we didn't get to $1 million. And I just still feel like this year, as the farmers are still getting back into, you know, working, they still need a ton of support. So I'm going to be continuing to speak about it. And I don't know, God willing, maybe we could get to the $1 million goal, but I am proud that we raised over $500,000. But one of the largest donors, you should know, was a church. And I see these donations coming in, $5,000, another $5,000, another $5,000, over $15,000. And I wrote to them, like, thank you so much. Like, how did you even hear about this? Like, where, you know, I knew some articles were written about it. I figured, she's like, we've been a subscriber. We're on your newsletter. We followed you since your Aliyah. We've been following you for the last 10 years. We love Israel. We want to support the farmers. So as so moving, by the way, at the same time, I also feel like it's a bit of a chilul Hashem. Like, how can that be the largest donors to Shemitah and to supporting our farmers here in Israel? So again, we didn't target non-Jewish. We do have an element of that following, and they are lovers of Israel and supporters, like opening their wallet type of supporters. But it's interesting how that happened and morphed.
Right. Fascinating. Yeah. So you have this huge media company. We've seen tremendous growth and reach and impact. What is like the number one thing you'd attribute that success to?
Hashem. Nothing else. Nothing else makes sense. Nothing else matters. So many things you should know, like I've tried and failed. So many things along the way of building these impressive numbers were financially challenging, emotionally challenging. I'm building this business and it's mamish by the grace of Hashem. It's like all siyata d'shmaya. We do our hishtadlus and we have to, and we dive in like crazy. And at the end, it's like whatever Hashem wants to, you know, to come to fruition does. And I feel like the things that I'm most proud of, it is nice and vanity numbers and bragging to say an audience of 5 million and 1 billion views, but to be able to say we raised over $500,000, we use this audience and community that we built to raise $500,000 to the farmers. That is what I think is the most rewarding and the biggest privilege. And we've worked with Daily Giving in the past year. We've worked with Support Our Farmers. I work with Yad Ezra Vishula Meats. I worked with Mayor Panim. Those are the things that I think the more that we use our platforms and our communities for the Jewish people, and obviously I've done it like my entire life focus right now is on Ish, for the Jewish people, then I think the more Hashem brings Shefa Bracha to what we're doing.
Wow. Okay, so you brought up Ish, so let's go to Ish. I don't think you were particularly bored.
I was.
Were you?
I was like totally bored. I was so bored and so stuck and so not creatively challenged, not strategically challenged. I basically got into like this sort of business and this merry-go-round of, okay, we have a platform and now we need advertisers. The majority of what I did in terms of building the company is not make recipes, is really just do business development and do more sales. And the sales were with, you know, generally CPGs, consumer packaged goods, like food companies. And it was like, okay, what's the next company we're going to incorporate? And it's like a playbook. We have literally like a plug and play. We had a plug and play solution for advertisers. And then we did the same thing on our end. It's like, we'd give you this email and these banner ads and these insertions into recipes and this activation with X amount of other videos, whether they're hands and pans videos, whether it's me on camera. And it's just like, it was a playbook.
Right.
And I'm not in the kitchen for years already, like in terms of new recipe development that mainly was happening by people that worked for us. Most of the video production was most efficient to scale on hands and pans videos, right? So what are hands and pans? Just the hands and the pans. You don't even see me. Well, guess what? Those are not my hands and those are not my pans. It's like we farm those out to production companies. Like we've worked with companies, whether it be Cleveland, LA, Philadelphia, Israel, Renana. So it's like, so much of what we're doing is just business development and project management. And it was just the same thing. And it's like, and how do we get more advertisers? I just didn't, I feel like this can't be just my legacy. This can't be just what I built this huge, not just audience and following, but the digital strategy that like I knew and had in my head and the experiences that I had and the expertise. I felt like it was just being wasted by just doing the same. And now what? And then what? What do you do after 1 billion views? What do you do? Okay, now we have 1.1 billion. Like, that's so exciting. You know, like, I feel like 1 billion was like, I got there and I said it really proudly for like a few months. And then, like, when I started saying it for a few years, it's like, now what?
Right.
So that's how H came about.
Did Aish come looking for you, or did you go looking for Aish?
They think they came looking for me. And they really, I was like I said, I was just on the phone with the White House and Rabbi Berg, our CEO, literally told the story. And he was like, we plucked her, we found her, we got her, we convinced her to come. I was looking for them. So I guess that's how like the best shidduch works, you know, because I
Right.
was really looking for something different in my life, something to parlay all the experience that I had and this incredible audience to do more for the Jewish people. And at the same time, they were looking, they had just set Aish Vision 2030, which is a vision to get 3 million more Jews learning Jewish wisdom online by 2030. And they were looking for, okay, now we have a vision. We want to affect 1 in 5 Jews, 20% of the global Jewish population. We know that's happening on digital media. How do we do that? Who can do that for us? So it was the perfect storm.
Wow. And so, like, what is the plan? How are you going to reach these 3 million Jews?
Gosh, that is like what keeps me up at night. That is what consumes my tefillos. It's many hows, it's many multiple strategies. In the end, even though the majority of where this is going to scale is going to be online and in the digital space. They're offline, many offline initiatives as well. Because I always believed in a 360-degree experience and a holistic brand experience. And I think that you have to have those in-person touch points as well. And that those are the people that become your brand ambassadors that help to then continue to spread online, like I said, where we really can scale. Right now, we are active on 7 social media platforms in 3 languages.
Wow.
English, Spanish, Hebrew. So it's going to be in multiple languages on multiple platforms. We have multiple websites. And we're also developing multiple niche communities around areas of interest. So food is the most obvious one, obviously, that we started with and that I brought along. But we really surveyed and did an intense research project on unengaged millennials. What are their areas of interest? And food philosophy and history were the three specific areas that actually came up and scored the highest. So
Wow.
we're really looking at both food, which thank God we had this incredible, you know, company to lean on and community to lean on, but both also philosophy and also history, and really look at them through a Jewish lens and answer with philosophy life's biggest questions. With history, answer where we came from, because you can't know where you're going until you know who you are. And then with food, it was like we know that that's such an incredible, non-threatening entree into Judaism and into culture, any kind of conversation. You want to bring people together, bring them around the table. So,
Yeah.
and that's the start. And we'll start to develop more brands, sub-brands, and niche communities around areas of interest to engage people, meet them where they're at.
Amazing. So Aish
Really
is doing.
simple. Yeah.
Yeah, you got this. You're done,
No,
Jamie.
not done, but if I got it, I mean, I mean, I mean.
You sound like you're all set up. So Aish is doing incredible work. You are doing incredible work, and I know that as much as it is up to Aish and scale and these huge projects, it's also up to each individual to be a brand ambassador for Yiddishkeit.
I love that you said that. We started something called Aleph Ambassadors because the founder of Aish, Rav Noach Weinberg, always said, if you know Aleph, teach Aleph. Whatever you know, you have the capability, you have the wisdom and ability to be a teacher. And as you said, brand ambassador for Yiddishkeit and Jewish wisdom. So we officially started. You can sign up. It's completely free to be an Aleph ambassador on Aish. And you'll get a weekly email with like our 5 most trending viral pieces of content that week that will allow you to share whether you like to share on WhatsApp or whether you're on Instagram or whether you like to share an article, forward an email, so that they're all different whatever digital platform you prefer, you can share this content on. And then you can also be part of like these exclusive events where once a month we get together and we talk about ways that we can continue to spread Jewish wisdom and access to the Rosh Hashiva, Rabbi Yitzchak Berkovitz, for questions. We unveil different pieces of content or strategy and run them by our ambassadors first to get feedback. And you can really play an active role in not just sharing, but shaping the strategy for the Jewish future. So completely join us.
That was going to be my question, because we're talking now to really, really busy women. You know what it's like. They're running businesses, they're raising families, and sometimes it could feel like, how could I also carry another responsibility? Like, I already have that responsibility to my husband, to my kids, to my business, to my community, to my extended family, to my parents, to my siblings, and you want me to be responsible for sharing Jewish wisdom? But I mean, this Aleph Ambassador sounds like sharing a piece on social media or forwarding an email sounds like a really, really doable way to like own up to that responsibility that we do carry and may not be able to express in ways that other people are.
Kano, you said the word responsibility, and we do as Jewish people, and that's the ethos of Aish. We have a responsibility for each other and for bringing the Jewish people back. But like you said, it's so overwhelming. We are already overwhelmed. We are like done, done, done. I always feel like not another thing, not another breath, not like once my eyes close at night, I can't imagine one more second of anything. I'm beyond done. This is such an easy way. You're anyway going to be consuming content, reading something that inspired you, and share it. How many things you share with your mother, you share with your sister, you share with your neighbor. So this is like, we're literally serving it up to you on a platter. And with the press of a button, you can feel like you did your job that day. And I'm a big, big proponent of not adding more to the plate of the Jewish woman. But yet we have this responsibility that you spoke of. And we also have our neshama has a need and a desire to give. And when we don't access that and leverage that and exercise that, we don't feel fully realized. Like we didn't fully realize our potential. And that is like the worst feeling to walk around with. So it's like, find the easy ways. Aleph Ambassadors is one. We'd love to have you. If not, find other easy ways that you can feel like you contributed something to the legacy of the Jewish people, you know, every day. And there are other, again, say one Tehillim. That could do it also. I'm a proponent of whatever is like small, easy, and achievable, and that you could check that box and feel like you did exercise your potential and responsibility for the Jewish people.
Wow. Yeah. I love that, because I think my mission is to transform the way busy from women experience time. So I really take women to this place where they feel like they have plenty of time to focus on what's important.
Really? Like plenty of time? That's what...
Plenty.
Wow. Sounds like magic.
It's not magic. I mean, it's hard work. It was hard work for me, but I think I sort of like frameworked it because I was coming from this place where like I didn't have time to breathe. And like friends knew, like, don't ask me to go out with you. Like, you could try to book me 6 months in advance. And then I went to this like opposite extreme where I was like, abundance of time there, you know, and then I was like, but there isn't an abundance of time because there's only 24 hours in a day. But I was just done with feeling stretched and squeezed and hectic and busy, and like I couldn't keep up. So I think that it's I've seen it. You can feel like you have plenty of time to focus on what's important, and part of that, a small part of that, is figuring out how to nurture all of the parts of you so that they get the attention they need in creative ways. So if your neshama needs to share and needs to connect and you're going to ignore it because you don't have time for it, you're not going to feel good. You're not going to feel like you have your plenty of time for everything that's important. But if you're not up to hosting big events, become an Aleph Ambassador.
Right. Correct. I love that. You have to find the thing that nurtures, like you said, that part of you, but in a way that works for you.
Right.
Like I'm not the event planner. I'm not the plan the shul dinner type of girl at all. But I can do other things, and I love that you're creating a space for us to find our unique way of connecting and giving.
Right. I want to circle back to something you mentioned, Jamie, because more recently I've been having a lot of conversations with a lot of women around bitachon. And you said, like, the one thing, right? The one thing that you attribute everything to is Hashem. And we all know that. We all know that intellectually. We all know that we don't have anything without Hashem and that anything that we do have comes from Hashem and not from our hishtadlus at all. And it's also really hard to integrate that, so to feel it. Something that I've been doing recently is just examining my thoughts and actions through this lens of bitachon, because, like I said, we all know this, and we say it and we'll daven, and then sometimes I'll have thoughts and I'll be like, but hold on, right? If I'm worrying about something, there's a lack of bitachon there, because if I knew that it had nothing to do with whether or not my strategy was a strategic one, or whether or not I was on my game, or whether or not I showed up, I wouldn't worry about those things. And so we're not supposed to be perfect yet, but just it's been so eye-opening for me to notice, like, those holes in where my intellectual knowledge has not integrated into how I feel and how I act. And I'm just so curious what that's been like for you.
That's been so challenging because I think that my default is to worry, right? Like some people are more, yeah. And I almost feel it for a while. I thought it was my secret sauce. Like if I worried about it, then it's going to work out okay. So like I had to worry because if I'm not worrying, then what's wrong with you know, like that kind of thing. Get in this crazy place. And so my husband basically said it's a lack of bitachon, and that we need to start learning. And so we said 5 minutes a day. We've done a few times. We've missed a few days. We have to start, but he started learning Shar Bitachon with me. And that's a step that I've recently taken in order to strengthen my emunah. But I feel like probably learning is the best thing because tefillah is yes, and that's good, but we know that we're not always so prepared for tefillah and so focused and like. And we're just like, you know, if we can do it, you know, then we're doing it, but we're, you know, might be rushing through it. And it's not like really the way. I just read this in Rav Wallerstein, the book about Rav Wallerstein, that's all about change. It's a book that recently came out. And he said, like, a girl had come to him and she's like, my tefillahs aren't working. And he's like, well, how do you daven? And he said, we in the olden days, you used to spend an hour preparing for tefillah, then davening, and then an hour coming down from tefillah before like the rest of the day, you know, continued. And I know what I'm like when I'm davening, like in the middle of like maybe also cleaning up from the morning and all, like also like, you know, putting something in the dishwasher and also like, and I remember I'm davening, I'm not loading the dishwasher right now. So I think maybe try to like 5 minutes of learning something on bitachon could be mechazeh, could strengthen that. And again, if it's 5 minutes, now, again, we're speaking about like manageable, bite-sized things that we can do. I do think learning is really the key when we talk about even Eish Vision 2030. Why do I connect to it so much? Because it's about learning Jewish wisdom, like learning Torah. Like inspiration is so fleeting. We feel that in a moment, we could be crying, we could be so moved. We think that we're going to change our life forever. And then whether it takes an hour, a day, or a month, that wears off. But when we learn, it really empowers us in a different way. That's lasting change. And so I think probably in this area, that's what I'm trying to do myself. And maybe like a gift we can all give to each other is like learning something 5 minutes on Emunah or Bitachon to strengthen that.
Yeah, so apropos, because I just aired an episode with Esther Kurtz, who started a podcast she calls Emunah for Non-Rebbetzins. Her
Wow.
episodes are 90 seconds long. She goes through Shaar HaBitachon and she WhatsApps it to my phone.
You at like, how do I join that?
Definitely. I'll send you a
Thank
link.
you. Thank you.
And I've shared this on the podcast, but what happened was I was listening to, I was like, this is amazing, because Shaar HaBitachon is that thing you know you're supposed to learn. Like, everyone's supposed to learn that at some point,
Totally.
but I had never picked it up, to be honest. And then she started this podcast and it was amazing and I was following along. And to be honest, I fell off. Like, I just slacked off listening to her episodes, even though it's so easy. She WhatsApps them to me and in
And I'm
90 seconds. and she's engaging and she's funny and she doesn't read from the text. Like, that's her whole approach, is making this super approachable, relatable, easy, accessible.
And my
And
husband's like in the checks, and I'm like, what'd you say again?
right. But Jamie, that was me with Esther even, because like you're saying, I was like, I would play the voice note, but while I was making supper, doing the thing, checking on the kids, and then at the end, I have no idea what she just said. So I just recently recommitted. I have a rule. I start my day with two of her episodes, and I have to write an index card for each episode. So I'm forced to pay attention because I don't start my work until I have my notes. And you can't take notes if you're not paying attention. So this is my
Like
new.
serious, kind of that, like that, like in it to win it.
But you know what? I found that I was listening and it doesn't do anything. I wasn't hearing. I was not hearing a word she was saying. And now that I'm doing it for real, which again, it's still, I'm doing two episodes, so I'm giving it 3 minutes of my time in the morning. And that's like, that's me seriously learning Shabi Tachum, but it's game changing to just, it like opens your eyes to new perspectives. It becomes a front burner topic because it's how I'm starting my day every day. So then when I'm moving through my day, like Esther's in the back of my head, and it impacts the way you see everything.
And like, we need the tools. Like, we need the kalim. It's not enough to say, okay, we need to have emunah and bitachon, but what is the practicality? How do you bring that down into reality and into your life? So I love that. Okay, so I'm gonna join the club, Lena Zen.
I'm on a mission. I'm like, everyone get on this, because it like I've seen how powerful it is. And I've always heard Shaar B'Tachon, but I wasn't getting around to picking up the sefer. So this has really, really been amazing.
Beautiful.
Yes, Jamie, I am gonna ask you to just leave us with a challenge. Someone is listening and she is ready to make this practical. And you shared so much insight into work-life balance and bitachon and your work at Aish. So you get to choose, like, what is that one challenge that you are going to have listeners take right now?
I would love to suggest a challenge that I would take with them, and that would be the Shaar B'Tachon and the 90 seconds. Because like I said, even my husband and I said, we'll do it 5 minutes a day. We've missed days. And, you know, when he's reading the text, I get like a little spacey, like you said. And so I really feel like, okay, 5 minutes was a lot and it's text-based. I love the idea. It's like no coincidence that how did we end up, you know, here? It's, you know, Shamayim. So 90 seconds from a woman, not as text-based, a little bit more practical in terms of like facing the day. So I love that. I would love to take this challenge together with all your listeners and you. And I'm not going to go down to writing the notes yet. Okay, I have to graduate, Hannah, but I would love to be part of this in the 90 seconds in the morning.
Fantastic. I'm going to piggyback on your challenge, Jamie. Anyone that reaches out to me, so all my listeners have my WhatsApp, my email, reach out to me that you are in on this challenge, and I will check in with you daily. So you will have that accountability partner.
Okay, does that include me?
You're in. I will check in
Okay.
with you daily.
Okay, fabulous.
Because
I'm going to
this
talk
is
to you.
it, like, this is all we need.
Yeah, I feel like we spoke about our responsibility to the Jewish people, right? And that's critical. But how can we be there for the Jewish people, for our families, if we're not there for ourselves? And bitachon and emunah are the building blocks of like mental health. Of like being able, we spoke about guilt, we spoke about like many time, and I just feel like it's so being there for our families. How do we prioritize our families if we are emotionally not like equipped to handle like that every single challenge? Because we're gonna get a million bumps a day, a million. Some are big, some are small, some are mountains, some are molehills. If we're not equipped to handle them, then how do we prioritize our family? How are we there for ourselves? How are we there for the Jewish people? So I feel like this is a foundational block. Especially for Jewish women. And certainly, I just know, you know, how my husband and I, we react to things. We're very close. And I'm so thankful to Hashem, truly, truly, my best friend. And we do everything absolutely together. And even we can be on the same page about something with regards to parenting, the way I see things that are challenging, the way they affect me, they don't affect him the same way. Or I'm so much more emotional and so much more, reactive. It's and like I just need different types of tools to be mechazik myself to get through. Like he's able to just like more practically digest the thing. Okay, and this is how we're gonna solve it. And now we're gonna move. And I'm like, are you even upset? He's like, I am upset, but look, I'm like on the floor, like you know what I'm saying, like in a puddle. So I just feel like as women, like, and mothers and wives and who have this like beautiful emotional connective side, like we need more than anyone, like the ability not to worry and not to be able to fall apart over all the challenges that we're going to get throughout the day and throughout our lives. And so I think it's bitachon and emuna. So
Let's do it. Something like I said, I've been like thinking about this a lot lately and recommitting to my learning, and I keep telling myself, because we talk a lot about bitachon in relation to hishtadlus, like knowing that it's not my hishtadlus, it's Hashem. But I've been moving into this space, and this is also bitachon. Like, if I knew how much Hashem loved me, nothing could touch me. Nothing. I want to think like nothing would even be difficult or challenging, because I mean, like, you're sitting in Hashem's lap. And so we're never really going to know in this world, because then that's just the nature of this world, and there wouldn't be that bechira. But knowing that the reality is something that I cannot fathom and will never fathom in this world, but it exists, a love for me that makes me untouchable, is just so comforting.
Yeah, it is so comforting. That's really, I think, the avoda of this world, meaning that that's what we're working towards.
Yeah.
And I just to add to that, Chana, I think also a official Shachter, I listen to him all the time on Torah, anytime. I fall asleep every night to a shir, and I always think, like, hopefully it will seep into my subconscious, even if I fell asleep. He says we are exactly where Hashem wants us to be.
Yeah.
So, and that's like an extension of what you were saying in terms of understanding, like, it's a love and it's purposeful. And this is it. We are exactly where Hashem wants us to be in this moment.
Yeah.
How do we believe in that? So, that's the true avoda of this world, I think, of this lifetime.
Yeah. And I have to respond to that, because, like I said, all my work around time, it really boils down to that. If you know that you're exactly where you're supposed to be, it's, you never don't have enough time, because you are in the perfect place. Like, you don't need time for anything else, because you are exactly where you're supposed to be, you know? And I'm sitting in Misrat HaPnim waiting for 4 hours for my visa. It's like, I'm not supposed to be working. I'm not supposed to be at home. Like, I am here. Like, Misrat HaPnim's blue plastic chair is the perfect place for me. And now there's no more like time squeeze. It's like, I'll sit here for 4 hours, because I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Jamie. This was just so fun. So just insightful. And I know.
It was beautiful. Really, yeah. Really such a gorgeous conversation and so meaningful. And I feel like it was like a deposit for me in my day. Like, oh, I thought, oh, I'm doing your podcast. Like, oh, I'm happy to do you a favor. And meanwhile, like, I just had the most beautiful, like, meaningful deposit in my day. So thank you for this, Chris. A real privilege.
Thank you, Jamie. Really, thank you for coming on. And I'm excited to be your chavrusa.
Yes, me too. Okay, let's do it.
We'll be in touch.
Amazing.
Thank you, Jamie.
Thank you.
Take care. Hatzlacha with you.
Thanks for hanging out with me today. As always, head to lifeworkspodcast.com, because that's where the party's at. Drop a comment, hashtag ILifeWorked, on this episode to let our community know that you took the challenge and encourage others to do the same. If you want to hear more about what I do for mompreneurs and how we can work together, reach out, Hannah@lifeworkspodcast.com. Wishing you a day of work and life that work to bring you tremendous fulfillment and joy. Till next time, I'll see you here. And again, thanks for being a part of our incredible community.